Well, good afternoon, everybody. Darren Saul here from Saul Searching, the Saul Recruitment Podcast. First one after the break, 2021. Hope everybody's doing fantastically well and rearing to go to make this year a very successful year. It's episode 26 today, and I have Evelyn Zumski in the house. How are you, Evelyn?
Oh, fantastic. What can I say? It's summer in Sydney.
It is indeed. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And we're going to be chatting all about how to learn to control your habits rather than have them control you. So for everybody out there who doesn't know who Evelyn is an ICF professional certified coach with 20 plus years experience in leadership and management, empowering people through change and building resilience. She has spent many years providing coaching to leaders of all levels in the corporate world, ranging from coaching on how to hire the right people, to how to engage staff and grow productivity, as well as how to deal with various blockers, including navigating the challenges of change in an ever-changing world and building resilience. Evelyn aspires to see every one of her training participants become effective, valuable, and exceptional assets to themselves and their employers. So Evelyn, welcome to the show. Really a pleasure to have you on. And I can't wait to have a great chat about all this great stuff.
Yeah, thanks for the great intro. I love the topic. What can I say? Habits are so 2021, aren't they?
They are, aren't they? They are. There's a lot of topics like this that are kind of coming back in a way, or, you know, it's stuff that's nothing new, but we're just putting different words around them, different labels around them. And, you know, it's more semantics, but the concepts are so important these days.
They really are. And of course, the thing is with anything that's brain-based, as habits are, the science is evolving all the time. So there's, you know, different, I would say, depths to what we talk about all the time.
Very true, particularly when you get into mindset and neural pathways and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of misinformation out there as well, and a lot of things that perhaps people may believe that they're doing right, but they're really not, you know?
Yep, love it. Well, before we get into that, I'd love to hear your story. How did you get into working in your field? What's your story?
Yeah, okay. So I started, I worked for many years in corporate, and I'm not ashamed to say I worked for Telstra for, you know, 20 odd years. And I worked from the bottom up, and you know, most people that know me probably wouldn't be surprised, but the people that also know me think that it's a bit crazy that I worked in complaints for most of that time.
Oh my God.
And even though, you know, it's a large organization and I weaved through different departments and different areas, I always found myself gravitating back to those high stress dealing with complaints and ministerials and having to do with politicians and high level, you know, media complaints and that sort of thing.
Wow. So you like the chaos. You like the chaos and the stress.
I like solving problems. I don't know that I like the chaos, but I like solving problems. It's kind of my passion.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what happens, of course, is that eventually, you know, as Telstra, when I started with Telstra, it was 120,000 staff. I got retrenched. I think at the moment they've got 20,000 staff. So, you know, over the time they've lost a lot of staff.
Yeah.
So then it was time for me to think about, okay, so I've been in Telstra for 20 odd years. And of course, when I started, it wasn't a case of, you know, needing qualifications and things like that. It was a different world.
Yep.
So by the time I was made redundant, it was like, okay, I've got an MBA level experience. I've worked executive level. I've managed the business. I've managed various products in the business and what have you. But no one would hire me because I didn't have a piece of paper, right? I didn't have the qualifications and I couldn't even get my foot in the door.
Wow.
So then it was about, okay, so what do I need to do to get to find a job, right? So I then started looking around and I thought, let's just get qualified. In that process of getting qualified, I started training, and I was with a trainer who told me that she got paid $2,500 a day to train. And she wasn't that good. And I thought, you know what? I can do this. So I started my training business, which was the start. And I thought, I've trained my staff before, you know, I've had many teams. I thought that's what I enjoyed doing. As it turns out, it's not really what I enjoy doing, but I went into training, and what I found is that I like the relationship. So I went into the coaching side of the business, which is what I really prefer. Group coaching. I love the interaction. I love the ownership. I love the ongoing relationship and seeing people grow. That is my passion. Perfect. But what I found in doing, you know, in doing all of this, that I found people that were in that brain-based place. And working for Telstra for 20 odd years made me a real techie. I love tech stuff. I love any, you know, the new technology. I love it. Absolutely.
Right, me too.
Then I found the brain. Oh my God.
can't get any more technical than that.
So it's the computer, you know, the three computers in the brain and all of that, just that, all the apps, you know, all the stuff that we talk about. So that sort of started my journey, I guess, in this place, because then I went to, you know, I was also at that time, I had a teenage daughter, so I was grappling with different generations, and that became another area that I really enjoy getting into as well. But it all comes back to people's beliefs and, you know, how your brain is wired through different generations and all of that sort of stuff. So it sort of brought me into that, you know, that science field. A lot of the stuff I do is around, you know, the neuroscience. I work with, I do emotional intelligence profiling and do a lot of emotional intelligence stuff with a group of neuroscientists, right? They came up with the profile. The habit change intervention stuff that I do is developed by a doctor who's done clinical trials. So again, it's got the science and the evidence base. The personal development stuff I do is seeped in positive psychology. Again, another science base. So that for me is just, that's it. I love it. I just really love it.
And I just love the way that, you know, you started off doing a lot of training, but then you realize that the most important factor is the mindset.
Yeah.
And the mind. And I just, that's so, it just rings true these days, because more and more and more you're hearing the same thing. And that seems to be the rate limiting step for our success is our mind and our thoughts and our internal dialogue more than our skills.
Yeah. And one of the biggest things I found when I, in retrospect, and which made me sort of go into the leadership area and even, you know, groups and teams, you know, managing teams, because a lot of the teams that I had in Telstra were high performing teams. And even in, you know, I had call center teams, I had product teams, I had complaint management teams. They were all high performing. They loved their jobs. They loved what they did.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, I even had the union coming to me at the time and saying, Evelyn, what are you doing differently? Because I never get any complaints from your team.
Great.
Like, what's going on for you?
Yeah.
And later on, I figured that this is because I had really high emotional intelligence and I could relate to people in a brain-based way, believe it or not. Yeah. You know, retrospectively, it's easy to say that. I wish I'd have known that back then. My career path might have been completely different.
Yeah. And actually, let's actually tackle that for a second. I mean, because that's another term that's been used heavily over the last few years. Define to us, what is emotional intelligence? What actually is it?
Well, emotional intelligence is really just about being smart with your feelings.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
When you're in a workplace, and that becomes part of our habits as well, and, you know, whenever we do anything, we base it on an emotion.
Yes.
Every single thing we do is based on an emotion. And I've heard people say, oh, emotion should stay out of the workplace, and, you know, we don't need people that emotional here. Well, I'm sorry, we're all emotional and we're all driven by emotion.
Definitely. All our driving factors are emotional. That's what drives us every day to get out of bed and achieve or not achieve or go in one direction or go into another. It's all based on that emotion.
It is absolutely 100%. And that emotion, the release of the emotion, of course, is hormones that course through your body that then relate to your health.
Yep.
You know, it also is a big driver for mental health, mental wellness. You know, so when we get to, when we have those emotions, emotional intelligence is really having an awareness of that emotion and not even subduing it. It's not about being positive. It's not about always being happy and rah-rah-rah. Yep. It's about understanding why you reacted in that way.
Yes.
And what the purpose of that was, and then what do you do with that information?
Perfect.
So emotional intelligence from a neuroscience perspective is just data. Emotions are just data. What do you do with that data?
Yeah, it's really the awareness of yourself and others, and therefore that allows you to interact in a very positive way and the most beneficial way in most situations.
Yeah.
Because you can take stock of what's happening and how things are going to be received.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And awareness is the key.
And awareness is everything. I mean, I love it. Yeah. So let's chat about habits, good old habits,
good
which
old
kind of fits
habits.
Into there. Let's chat about, you know, when and how habits are actually formed, if you want to give us some insight into that.
Well, so habits, I just want to be distinguish between habits and behaviours.
Sure.
Because this is part of, as I said to you before, the ever-evolving science behind these things.
Yeah.
And what happens a lot of the time is people confuse habits with behaviours.
Mm-hmm.
A habit is something that is automatic. It's something that you do without thinking.
Yep.
Okay, so something like brushing your teeth is a habit.
Yep.
Because if you didn't brush your teeth, your mouth feels, oh, you know, it's yep. like it's a horrible feeling.
Yep.
And you have to try and get to brush your teeth. It's yep. just that compelling.
It's,
and
if it's subconscious. It's like a subconscious repetition behavior. Is that what it is?
It's automatic.
Automatic, yeah.
Automatic. Okay. Automatic. Whereas a behavior is something that takes effort to do.
Okay.
So, you know, we're in January and people would set New Year's resolutions. One of them would be, let's get fit. I'm going to go to the gym. I know I'm going to get up. Yeah. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to go for a 5-mile jog every day and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's a behavior. That's hard work and it's unsustainable. Surprise, surprise. That's why New Year's resolutions don't work, right?
Yeah.
Because you're trying to change behaviors and not habits.
Yeah.
We have habits for a reason, and that is, of course, because as human beings by nature we are lazy. We like to do the least we have to do.
Yep.
And habits are a way of putting us on autopilot and allowing us to conserve our energy, or allowing our brain to conserve its energy.
Perfect. Yep.
So that's the purpose of habits.
Yep.
And that's what they're there for. And that distinction between, you know, habits and behaviors is something that often when you hear about people wanting to change habits, it's behaviors they're changing, not habits.
Right. But can't you change or turn a behavior into a habit?
You can. You can. If you want that behavior to be a habit, but there's a process that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about doing anything that's hard, let me tell you,
yes.
because we know, right? If I said to you, if even just saying to you, okay, Darren, you've got to, I want you to go on a you know, 21-day detox,
oh.
right? Okay, all right. So your brain might go, oh, my God, a 21-day detox.
Yep.
Oh, that's hard work. Oh, I don't know if I can do it. Oh, it's a struggle, right?
Oh, like I'm shutting down already.
Shutting down already. And that's the problem. It's just too much. Whereas if you're doing something like, maybe, you know, you want to create a habit of drinking more water, it's an easy thing to do, right?
Yeah,
when you're sitting here on Zoom, you just make sure you have a glass of water by your side, and when you have a break, you just drink that water and replenish it, right?
Love it. So it's about how do we create those habits in the most cost-effective and energy-effective way?
Any energy-effective way. The other thing with habits is that there's a purpose that we do the habit. There's a reward.
Mm.
You never do anything. We as human beings, and you know, this is a reality. We don't do anything unless we get a reward for it.
Yep.
Right. Even yelling at people, we get a reward. I know a neuroscientist that is, works in the emotional intelligence space when he gets really overwhelmed, he starts yelling at people, right? Like that's his response to being overwhelmed. And when he really thinks about it a bit more, what it's doing for him is by him yelling at people, it's pushing people away so that they can't put more stuff on him so he doesn't get more overwhelmed.
Makes sense. There's a reason. Right?
It makes sense. But you look at then, okay, how well is that working for him?
Yeah, as an emotional intelligence specialist.
Right.
It's a bit of a contradiction.
It's a it's about then understanding, well, geez, that's not really helpful to me.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to find a different solution.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing with habits is we all get a reward from it. Doesn't matter. You know, there's no such thing as a good or bad habit. It's what you're getting out of it that's the key, really.
Yeah, love it. Beautiful. And so let's talk about habits in relation to the workplace. How do habits affect our productivity or not affect our productivity? Because that's obviously an area that you're very well versed in.
Yeah, so how do they not? Given that habits is everything we do, right? We talk about habits in the workplace. You can talk about, there's a reason that in workplaces, they put policies and procedures in place. Mm-hmm. Procedures are there to create habits for you so that you perform a certain task in a certain way every time.
And it saves, again, saving your energy. You don't have to think about it.
Don't have to think about it. You don't have to, you know, you really don't have to try really hard so long as you can follow that process. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the habit. But of course, there's lots of other habits, right? There's, you know, the habit of going into the lunchroom for maybe a tea break and standing around gossiping, right?
Yeah.
There's the habit of that avoiding that boss, perhaps, that nobody really likes, that perhaps is not very emotionally intelligent. And
the habit of procrastination.
The habit of procrastination, absolutely. You know, so just about anything you can relate to those sorts of habits in the workplace, productivity, you know, being late all the time, you know, taking time to not doing research perhaps, or, you know, those sorts of things that can be detrimental, you know, keeping receipts if you're a business owner, little things like that. They're really key to productivity in the workplace. And actually there's a, you know, one of the, I think you may have heard of Kaizen, right? Have you heard of Kaizen?
Yes, I think so.
So Kaizen is actually a Japanese term, and it was created by a Japanese car manufacturer. And as you can appreciate with car manufacturers, it's a very process-driven field.
Yep.
Where it's a process improvement methodology. And the key to the Kaizen is whenever there is a break in the chain, that is immediately called out, right? So in the process line of a car manufacturing, there's lots of bits and pieces. And if one bit doesn't work properly, then it slows the whole line down, or it could even cause defects and all that sort of thing, right?
Right.
So Kaizen is a process whereby people are encouraged to actually put their hand up the minute there's something wrong.
Wow, I love it. Any idea what that word means, Kaizen?
I can't remember.
The audience can look that one up.
Yeah, it's around, it's definitely around process improvement. Right. And, you know, and there's a story of actually Toyota, where the Japanese head of Toyota had come to visit the factory in America. And just after this Kaizen had been implemented in the factory, and he saw a gentleman working on the process line, and he was having problems with a particular part. And what they had was they actually had a rope that they pull down when they have an issue, so that it can get solved quickly and things can move on, right?
Oh, I love it.
And this guy, this head of Toyota was watching this guy struggle with this, you know, his part of the process. And he was trying to, you know, rearrange this piece, and he was, you know, fiddling around with it and everything else. And the guy standing there going, thinking, like, why have I just put all this stuff in place specifically for this and people are not using it, right?
Yeah.
So in the end, this guy went down, the head of Toyota went down, tapped the guy on the shoulder and said, look, there's the bell, right? Let's call the bell, right?
K's on, yeah.
K's on, right? Now, of course, all the other managers in the place shit themselves, sorry, for forever. Literally, we're not real happy with the fact that they've been shown up by the head of Toyota, right?
Yeah.
But what they found was there was a culture or a habit of people being afraid to actually own up to the fact that something was wrong.
Yeah, because also part of the Japanese culture and a lot of other Asian cultures is the philosophy of saving face.
Yeah.
Because that kind of is built into that, and that's a bit of an antagonist to Kaizen in a way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But the whole process is put in place to prevent that, so that it would make the whole thing more seamless. And people had to understand that, you know, and that was part of the education piece, was that the fault is not with the person, it's with the machinery, it's with the process,
yep.
Right? And we need to fix that as soon as possible. So that's a good example of, you know, things that can go wrong in a workplace when the culture's not right.
Yep.
That's a poor culture habit, right? Because they're afraid in a workplace to speak up.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's common in workplaces, isn't it? Where, yeah, absolutely. Where people won't speak up because they're afraid of the repercussions of what might happen, or, you know, they think that it's going to be unfavorable for them, yep. to do that sort of thing.
100%.
Yeah, so that's a good, you know, a good example of habits in the workplace. Yep. Of course, there are those people in the workplace that have a habit of cutting corners, and, you know, yeah. All these things cause problems, don't they?
Yeah, I love it. I just love Kaizen. What a great great philosophy, or a great system. I think
it's part of what they base 6 seconds, six, what is it, Six Sigma.
Okay, Six Sigma, yep.
Yeah, wow, on that Kaizen methodology.
Yep, and for everybody out there, I think Six Sigma is a project management methodology.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And so where does awareness and self-awareness fit into this? Obviously very important.
Well, you know, if you saw that, right, if you were a manager of a workplace, and your CEO turned up and you that happened to you, you would be not really impressed.
No, right? Definitely.
Because, of course, that reflects on you personally.
Yep.
Right? The awareness here is that that manager needed to be aware that this situation was going on in the workplace, mm-hmm. and not turn a blind eye to it and not be dictatorial, right? Dictators shouldn't exist anymore. Certainly the laws don't support that, but that's sort of not something that's done anymore. So it should be something where a workplace where people are encouraged to acknowledge when things go wrong, yeah. where failure is not a bad thing. It's actually, I call failure steps to success. I love failure.
Yeah, definitely. Because
we don't learn anything unless we fail. I mean, 100%. Goodness sakes, look at Elon Musk.
Yep, yep. And that's what I love as well about the Japanese culture, is that everything is there for the greater good of the team or the group rather than the individual. And so that's why Kaizen is so important, is such an important part of that methodology, because it's about the efficiency of the whole team and the result more than that one person or one issue.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So it is the whole awareness piece then comes down to, it's a bit of problem solving, really, around what's happened here, what's gone wrong. Again, it's acknowledging that that's not a bad thing, right? We have to know what's gone wrong to be able to perhaps make things better or reevaluate what's going on there, you know. So that's kind of where that whole awareness piece comes into that. And that can come into, you know, many different areas of lots of different situations like that, where you may have different levels of that sort of internal conflict,
yes,
shall we say, of people not wanting to say anything. And I see this all the time with the executives that I coach, where it's then called imposter syndrome, right? It's like, oh, I've been put in this job. I don't really know what I'm doing. But I can't tell them that I don't know what I'm doing because they hired me to do something, right?
And I've also heard a similar feedback when it comes to 360 degree feedback and interviews. That's something that was a bit of a buzz a little while ago. I don't know if it still is, but a lot of managers would shy away from 360 degree feedback processes because they didn't want to hear what was going on. They didn't want to hear the other perspective.
No. And they still happen. They do still happen.
Okay.
And I know that in some companies they take that quite seriously. Mm-hmm. And some of the managers that perhaps are not, that aren't taking action or, you know, don't want to own up to their own deficiencies, I guess, or their own limitations, will be panicking because they know that the feedback is not going to be good, or they're shocked when the feedback is poor.
Yeah, so true. And for me, a leader, if you're a leader or a manager, you have to be prepared to take all that on board. You have to be prepared to ask for it, take it on board, and use it to your ability to be better, not shy away from it. You know, that's the whole ethos of leadership and management, really.
I was going to say, and there's a difference between leadership and management, right? Management is about just managing things. So that's great. You manage a workflow, you manage a process, you manage leader. A leader is someone that people follow, right? So you lead by example because people follow you. That's what a leader is, right? Definitely. You're following that person. They're setting the example for you. They set the vision. They set the, they set up the whole culture of the workplace, what's acceptable, what's not.
100%. You know, they inspire their team. They inspire everybody across the line. You know, that's they're there for that.
Yeah, absolutely. They bring people along on the journey. And they know how to do it. And that's the changing face of, you know, the workplace today is it's far more collaborative. But there are times when a leader someone needs to lead. We can't all just sit, you know, and collaborate. Someone needs to lead at some point, right?
Definitely. And that's a whole other discussion about who people should choose to be leaders as opposed to, you know, fantastic employees or workers or part of the team. It's another other discussion. But
Absolutely. But if they've developed, you know, poor habits along the way, and they just bring them into the workplace with them.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, fantastic. I mean, I love that. So interesting. And a particular case on, I think that's sensational. I'm going to do some research.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
And so tell us a bit more, Evelyn, about how you actually work and your process. I'd love to know more.
Yeah, so what happens... I do a number of things. I do online training, which I love to do, and I also do one-on-one coaching.
Great.
The process that I use, and it will depend on the individual and what the individual needs or what the company needs. So I have a number of things that I do. One is the emotional intelligence profiling. I think it's a good place to, you know, help people understand perhaps areas that they may need to work on. The other thing, of course, is the habit intervention. So there's a whole process around identifying what habits you want to create, what habits you want to break, and then finding the actual trigger. So we were talking before about, you know, what a habit is, but there's a process that goes with habits, and that is there's always a trigger. There's something that will trigger a habit. Then there's the routine that you carry out, whatever it is, and then you get the reward at the end.
Gotcha. Those are the three stages of habits in a way.
That's the three stages of habit formation. The problem, of course, is that you don't always find the right trigger or the right reward. And if you don't find those two, you will just never do it. Uh-huh. So my process is about helping people identify the correct triggers for... if they want to break a habit, or creating triggers that people can stick to, right? Not like getting up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym. That's not going to work.
And I suppose that's where you know, it's quite subconscious, a lot of these triggers, because there's a lot of work has to go into really identifying those triggers in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the big thing, is 80% of what we do is automatic. Mm. 80% of what we do, we're on autopilot. So it does take that awareness piece again to find the actual trigger. And it's often not what we think it is, and the reward. Yeah. Like, you know, that I was saying before about the emotional intelligence guy yelling at people, right? Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. What was his reward, you know? And it is about finding those two. Because you need to replace, you know, the only thing you replace is the bit in the middle, but you need to make sure that you've got the right trigger and you've got the right reward in the end. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. And I do a lot of that, you know, let's find out what the right triggers are for you. There's some little experiments you have to do, some home play that you have [S2] Sure. [S1] To do to find out what those triggers are. And let's face it, it doesn't just relate to work. It does relate to lots of different things. You know, the other thing we talk about is those keystone triggers. Mm-hmm. So there are keystone habits that you create that when you change this one little habit, it has a flow-on effect for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Okay. So that's what I work on a lot, is those little keystone habits. And it can be things as simple as communicating well or not taking things personally or, you know, those sorts of things that then have a flow-on effect with lots of different areas.
Amazing. And I'm assuming that you do a lot of work one-on-one, but you also do group sessions with corporates and training sessions and coaching and all that?
Yeah, I do. I have a couple of programs. So I do a Healthy Mind program, which has got the positive psychology aspects in it as well. I do everything brain-friendly. I don't make people feel, I am on the journey with you. Right. I don't force you into anything. I don't tell you to do anything. I am on the journey with you. So I do the positive psychology. I also do a habit intervention for weight management because, you know, with COVID kilos, right, changing those habits is really key. And it also helps to debunk a lot of the myths around the stuff you hear in the media, because the diet industry is just rife with rubbish out there and misinformation. And, you know, if you think that you can sustain weight management by having shakes and going on detoxes and things like that, you know, you're really kidding yourself. So
absolutely. Wow.
So they're the programs I do, and as I say, I do, there's a emotional intelligence profiling that I do alongside with career coaching or personal coaching, personal development coaching.
Beautiful.
Because that emotional intelligence is really key to star performers. It's the research has shown that those people that are most successful in a workplace are the ones that have the higher EQ. So,
that's a question that I've always wanted to ask someone who's a specialist in this area.
Yeah.
How much of EQ can you teach?
How much can you teach? Well, we've all got.
We've got all got EQ to different degrees, but how easy is it to really develop your EQ and boost your EQ?
Oh, it's really easy. But once you start doing it, you won't stop. It's not as difficult. It is that awareness piece.
Okay.
Once you create that awareness, and then maybe even changing the habits, but if you create that awareness, it's like, you know, it puts the focus on that area. So it's like if you want to buy a car and say you want to buy a red car.
I was just about to think of that scenario.
Or you see red cars everywhere.
That's true, yeah.
Right? So it's creating that awareness. So once you see that awareness, once you're aware of what you're doing.
Yeah. Then you'll be.
You'll get to change, right? But change is a gradual thing. So even with habits, right, you can't change habits overnight. The average to change a habit is 66 days, let me tell you.
Wow. People used to say 21 days, but is that nonsense?
Yeah. See, I tell you, it's not. It's the average to change a habit is 66 days of consistent action.
Wow.
Yeah, and that depends on the complexity of the habit, right? So if you're doing something that's really, 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 really simple, it probably won't take you 66 days. It might take you 14 days.
Sure.
Yeah. But if you want to make a habit out of going to the gym that we were talking about before, that might take you a year to make that a habit.
If it's at 5 o'clock in the morning, it'll take you 2 years.
It'll take a long time. If you can sustain that sort of, you know, every day for that, it's, and, you know, sometimes some habits you don't do every day as well. So if you don't do them every day, it's going to mean it's going to take you longer establish that habit as well.
Makes sense. I mean, I'd love to hear a great case study of, you know, a manager or a team or a person that was really had some challenges in the corporate world, and they came to see you, and through some coaching, you managed to really open their eyes and turn their whole life around, and the results have been sensational. Have you got any, without mentioning names, of course, but have you got any case studies?
There's a few. I have a lady that I was coaching. She's an executive in a financial firm, a large global multinational financial firm. That had a real, it was the imposter syndrome, and I get that a lot, right? Syndrome. I'm in this job. She was managing 400 people at that point. And she was expected to get up and inspire and, you know, speak in front of these people and keep them engaged and what have you. But her self-belief was, I'm not good enough for this. I can't do that.
Why did they choose me? How did I get here?
How did I get here? I'm really scared, you know, people, if I stand up on stage now, you know, people are going to see right through me and all of that. So we did some work together and, you know, through getting her to actually think about what it was why she was doing that job in the first place. Cause I'm a big believer in people following their passion. And, you know, if that job was right for her, if she really wanted to do it. And she actually did love it. But what she was able to connect to was the fact that all her life, she wanted to help people. And the best way she could do that is by get on stage and play a role. And that would make them light up, right? That was from when she was young, right? She would do this from a child. But she couldn't make that same connection as she got older. But we managed to make that connection together. And she absolutely knocked it out of the park. Wow. And when we talk about the 360, she got rave reviews for her 360 from all of her team and even the team beneath her. You know, through COVID, they actually thrived. This is a financial sector, you know, that rely on travel. They actually thrived. They did exceptionally well. And, you know, for me, the most flattering thing was her feedback to me was that, you know, her comment was that you left an imprint on my soul like nobody else in my life. So.
Wow. That's fantastic. So cool. Incredible. Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah, I know. It gave me goosebumps too. I love it. That's why I do. That's why I absolutely love that ownership and helping people, you know, hold their hand through the process and really make real change, not just teach you a thing and then walk away. That's why training, when I said earlier, I thought it was training. It's not, you know.
It's coaching, really. That must be incredibly rewarding to have that experience.
Absolutely. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And that's why I do what I do. So now I do the groups, and the groups are smaller groups, so everybody gets to have their input into what goes on, and you know, everybody contributes. I like it to be, you know, and it is a safe space for everybody, and people feel comfortable in being able to say what they think and how they feel.
I love it. Fantastic. And it's kind of brings us right back to 360 when we realize how important mindset and your mental state is to achieving your success personally or professionally. It just time and time again, it all boils down to the same thing. As you say, 80% is in the mind.
Absolutely. And with COVID now, you know, we know there's supposed to be like work-life balance, right? We know that we weren't put on this planet to work. No. You know that. We were not put on this planet to work. We were put on this planet to live.
Exactly.
How many people live, right?
Yep.
So that's what I do. I like to put people in the driver's seat rather than sit on autopilot in the passenger seat. Get in the driver's seat. Take control, you know. Do what you want to do. Do what you love. Do what you're passionate about. And it's not all about work. Work's great. You need to pay your bills. We need, you know, we all need money. Fantastic. But there are other things.
Definitely. Wow. Sensational, Evan. And that's been absolutely sensational. I really have enjoyed listening to you. You know, I can just imagine you have a wealth of knowledge and information and stories and insights. And, you know, anybody that would work with you would really benefit. And you have a lovely manner about you as well. You know, you're a great, you're very empathetic.
Thank you. I have to say it's probably, I ask my people, you know, that I coach, what's your superpower? And I would have to say that my superpower is probably making people feel really comfortable really quickly.
Yep, I love it.
Yeah.
Well done. Now, for everybody out there who would love to find out a bit more about you and how to work with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so my company link is Leading Training Solutions, so they can find me through that, or Evelyn at Leading Training Solutions. It's a long one, I know. or just look me up on LinkedIn. That's another way. Yeah, that's a great way to do it.
Awesome. Well, I'll put all those in the show notes for everybody. And, you know, once again, it's been a sensational chat. We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we have.
There's been a lot of great stuff, including Kazon, which I'm going to go and research. Anything that you'd like to leave the audience with as final thoughts for you moving into 2021 and the world around us?
Yeah, and what I would say to people is forget about New Year's resolutions. Think about making a lifelong change and doing those things really that benefit you and that suit you and making them automatic. So creating a good habit out of them.
Yeah, very, very cool. Evelyn, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. I'm sure the audience is going to love this interview because they're going to learn so much as I have. And again, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll have to bring you back again because there's so much more to discuss.
Yeah, I'd love it. I'd love it. Thank you, Darren. It's been a pleasure. It's been lots of fun. As I said, I could talk for hours.
Well, thank you so much, everybody out there. Again, all the loyal listeners of the Soul Recruitment Podcast, please thank you again. Really appreciate all your support and hope you enjoyed this interview. We'll be back very, very soon for another one, and have a fantastic day. Bye for now.